WFAE streaming is sponsored by Corporate Information Technologies, a local IT company assisting business and taking a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The Democratic convention may have ended last night, but the reverberations will rumble through the campaign and through this city for months to come. It was a gigantic pep rally, the likes of which this city has never seen. It consumed the town and brought it national, even international, attention from the 15,000-some journalists who came here from around the world. The parade of primetime speakers seemed to be a partisan's dream, with each new speaker topping the previous one. Michelle Obama and President Bill Clinton blew the roof off the place, and although President Obama was originally supposed to speak at the roofless Bank of America Stadium, when possible storms moved him indoors, that roof, too, seemed to come off.
Times have changed, and so have I. I'm no longer just a candidate. I'm the president.
See what I mean? Today we've gathered together some of WFAE's reporters who have helped cover this convention for us inside and out. We'll hear from them about everything, from the protest to the stars, from the police to Charlotte businesses and how they did or didn't do. But first, we spend some time with Dr. Eric Heberlig, Associate Professor of Political Science at UNC Charlotte. He's been sharing his political analysis with us as the convention unfolded this week and was in the arena for the president's speech last night. How did he do?
Actually, it was just an ordinary speech. I thought his was the fourth best speech of the night. Governor Granholm of Michigan, Senator Kerry, I don't know where that speech was when he was running for president, but he had a great speech. Joe Biden, I thought, all gave terrific speeches. His was, I think the challenge for him was after Michelle Obama's speech, after President Clinton's speech, after his reputation for giving big speeches, it's hard to hit that hype again.
Plus, he set the bar pretty high 4 years ago when he gave the speech at in the Denver football stadium, and he wasn't in the Charlotte football stadium. Do you think it would have been a bigger speech, felt bigger, had he been in the stadium?
Yeah, I thought about that last night, that it really didn't seem to be a speech written for a football stadium. I actually thought last night's venue was better for it.
Well, here's the other thing I thought about last night as I was watching him speak. People were so enthusiastic with President Obama as candidate Obama 4 years ago. And how much of that do you think was because, and we'll be kind here, President Bush was challenged. I know, you know, he's a smart guy, but he was challenged when it came to speaking. He had difficulty stringing along several words and making a sentence out of it. And along comes President Obama, who is articulate and a good speaker. I mean, was it more of a release or a relief for people to say, hey, this guy can actually speak?
Well, Obama also spoke intelligently about difficult public issues. I mean, you think about his speech in Philadelphia on race. You think about his speech on religion. He would deal with tough topics. He wouldn't boil them down to sound bites that we were used to. So he was giving us a different type of political speech that was refreshing.
So Michelle Obama humanized him. Joe Biden personalized him. Bill Clinton defended his record. And last night, President Obama, I think, spent some time defending and defining the Democratic approach to government.
We don't want handouts for people who refuse to help themselves, and we certainly don't want bailouts for banks that break the rules. We don't think that government can solve all of our problems. But we don't think that the government is the source of all of our problems, any more than our welfare recipients, or corporations, or unions, or immigrants, or gays, or any other group we're told to blame for our troubles.
Now, the only one of the only item in that list at the end, welfare recipients, corporations, unions, immigrants, gays, or any other group, that doesn't seem to fit into the Democratic list is corporations. How did that get in there?
Oh, I think it's put in there to make the point that the Democrats and the left like to blame people too. And this goes back to Obama's original 2004 convention speech, you know, that we're not a divided country. And you saw this in Clinton's speech last night too, saying that the divisiveness has just gone too far, that we need to emphasize constructive problem solving. And I think, you know, that's a small nod to that theme of the convention.
So he had to show, he had to appear presidential, and we played that first sentence where people went wild, excuse me, when he said, "I am the president." So he had to appear presidential, and he had to put himself above his opponent. But he also has a record to defend, and he also has a situation in the country that is not terribly good. Was he effective at explaining, do you think, where we are today and why we aren't as well off as we were when President Clinton was in office?
We certainly got his accomplishments. We got those over and over. You may be surprised to know that Osama bin Laden is dead, for example.
They mentioned that a lot.
And that the auto industry has been saved by President Obama. I think what we got less, just because it's a harder case to make, is why the pace of the recovery has been slow, mm-hmm. and what he might do in a second term to try to speed that up. The way they've kind of framed it is that they've set the foundations for growth, and it's a long-term process of building prosperity and opportunity.
You know, in 2004, one of the arguments for the re-election of President Bush is that you don't want to switch commanders-in-chief in the middle of a war, which we've heard many, many times in the past. And if the economic recovery is kind of a war and you're in the middle of going down a certain path, do you really want to pull the rug out and start all over again down a different path in the middle of this recovery? Could they have said it that way?
They could have said it that way. You know, they chose not to make that metaphor. They chose to make their foreign policy cases in other ways.
And since Sunday... you want to go there?
We'll
go there. Let's talk. We'll come back to what I was going to talk about. Well, let's talk about foreign policy, because he made the point that, he's the president and he's a little more experienced than the other guy.
My opponent and his running mate are new to foreign policy. But from all that we've seen and heard, they want to take us back to an era of blustering and blundering that cost America so dearly. After all, you don't call Russia our number one enemy, not Al-Qaeda, Russia, unless you're still stuck in a Cold War mind warp. You might not be ready for diplomacy with Beijing if you can't visit the Olympics without insulting our closest ally.
Smack down to Romney and some of the comments that he made at his convention about, and it was almost like a Cold War speech in some places toward the end, but also smack down to the neocons, who seem to find a war behind every box in the corner.
Actually, John Kerry gave a speech earlier in the night where it really was focused on foreign policy, which was interesting because other than the Osama bin Laden incident, we haven't heard much about foreign policy at either convention, and Kerry took on a theme of the Republican convention that Republicans argue that America is an exceptional place, and Obama doesn't see it that way, and Kerry took that on directly. So what was interesting about the Democratic convention was you had different people responding to some of these major Republican themes. Now Clinton, of course, tried to do it all, but he had a very short speech in which to do it.
Who, Clinton? He went almost 45 minutes or something like that. You mentioned exceptionalism because the Republicans made a lot of that in Tampa, and the president made some comments about that yesterday as well, in that he believes that we are exceptional and that we're not on the decline, and he painted a brighter, sunnier picture. And made a point of saying that the Republicans, I think, painted a dark picture, and he sees the world differently.
Yeah, if you look historically, the candidates who win are those who are more hopeful, who are more positive. So trying to paint the Republicans into this negative box, almost being anti-patriotic, I think is an effective move for the Democrats.
And he was also able to work in some humor into the speech last night.
I know campaigns can seem small, even silly sometimes. Trivial things become big distractions. Serious issues become sound bites. The truth gets buried under an avalanche of money and advertising. I mean, if you're sick of hearing me approve this message, believe me, so am I.
Now, one of the things that they've been talking about since the talk shows on Sunday was, are you better off today than you are 4 years ago? Did he make the case well that we are?
They very much hammered on the fact that when President Obama took office, the economy was in free fall. We just had the banking crisis. So, and the polls have indicated that all through his presidency, people have remembered that and accepted that. So I think they effectively made the point that we are better now because the bar was so low when he came into office. They mentioned the job growth, 4.5 million was the term the number they used repeatedly. Now, whether people accept that as a pace that's fast enough, I really think is the key question. But they certainly wanted to remind people of the circumstances when he entered office and want people to basically give him the benefit of the doubt for moving in the right direction.
He also did something last night that I don't know that he's done before. I don't recall him having done it before, but I could be wrong. And that is he not only asked for our votes, he asked for us to vote. And sometimes it wasn't – I know that he has to – bring people into the voting booth if he's going to win this election as he did in 2008. But if he just says, you need to vote, you could vote for the other guy. He wasn't always specific about it, but he asked for our votes for him several times in that speech last night.
Yeah, in 2008, he would sort of assume that we were just the spirit of the moment would carry us along, and kind of the social movement aspect of his campaign made that happen. This time they really do have to get people to the polls. So, yes, it was an explicit ask. It was explicitly urging us to get out to vote.
The Democrats announced before this ever came to town that this would be the most open and accessible convention in history. Was it?
Certainly, if they would have had been able to have the speech in Bank of America Stadium, that would help to have reinforced that claim. They did have a Carolina Fest on Monday where you had huge numbers of people coming in to participate in convention events. They had caucuses and meetings that were open to the public so people could come in and hear and listen to the policy discussions. So I think in terms of engaging the public, I don't know if they met that historical goal, but it certainly seems to me that they made the effort. The media, I think, can rightly claim that they weren't entirely forthcoming in the weeks and months prior to the convention on sharing information with what they were going to do.
Compare the two conventions. If you just had to button them down in a couple of paragraphs and describe what happened and how it felt and what they accomplished, how would you compare the two?
Having not been in Tampa, I'll rely on reporters who were there. They said there was a lot more excitement at the Democratic convention. The Republicans were very quiet, which was interesting because the Republicans are supposed to be more excited this year. At least in the hall, the Democrats delegates were much more excited this year. Outside the hall, they were very impressed with Charlotte. There were people on the streets. People were having a good time. It was a much better environment in Charlotte.
We have to take a break. We're going to come back with more from Dr. Eric Heberlig from UNC Charlotte, and we'll hear from several WFAE reporters who have been helping us cover this convention over the past week and have been doing a bang-up job the rest of the day as well, working, I don't know, 26-hour days. That's what it seemed like, at least. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, you'll hear top journalists give meaning to the week's national headlines. Take a look back at what happened, how it affects your world. The Friday News Roundup. Join us.
Join Diane Rehm for 2 hours of News Roundup, including coverage of the DNC in Charlotte this week, right after Charlotte Talks, here on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Bylo Supermarket, serving the Southeast for over 50 years, featuring Full Circle products, Bylo's complete line of natural and organic foods. Store locator and fuel perks program details at buy-low.com. And AeroChem Incorporated, a family-owned chemical blender providing chemical solutions to local industry for over 30 years. Information on their product line and contract services at AROCHEM.com. Well, as we were talking about this morning, the DNC is a memory. Charlotte's getting back to normal. Everybody's gone home. Even the Hollywood stars, even the protesters are gone. But so many people were here, we couldn't get to them all. So on Monday, some convention leftovers, and tasty ones, too. We'll hear from Health and Human Services Director Kathleen Sebelius, Gwen Ifill from PBS, and Time Magazine's Michael Grunwald, among others, Monday at 9. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Dr. Eric Heberling, Associate Professor of Political Science at UNC Charlotte. He's been with us all week long helping us out with the political aspect of what went on in the city over the past week. The speeches that the speakers that came to the Democratic National Convention seemed to be, and I think I said this earlier, one got better than the other along the whole week, and each was very different. And I think it's safe to say that the governor of Massachusetts, Deval Patrick, almost eclipsed the keynote speech from San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro. Not intentionally, but he just gave a bang-up speech.
Certainly in terms of rousing the crowd, rousing the delegates in the hall, Deval Patrick was one of the most loudly received speeches. Castro focused more on developing kind of the themes of the Democratic Party, speaking to people outside the hall rather than rallying the base inside the hall.
And then you had Michelle Obama, who, in the short history of First Lady addresses, gave the best speech I've ever heard.
Yeah, it was a fantastic speech. It was well written in terms of pulling together the personal stories of her, Barack, their family story together, and dealing with the pressures of the presidency and a family life.
And each of these speakers were very different. President Clinton is a master at this. He's a master at being able to take very complicated policy issues and making you want to listen to his explanation of them and making it entertaining and interesting. And for a nanosecond, you might actually understand the ins and outs of all these policies.
Yeah, as he got into the policy section of the speech, which was at least 35 minutes into it,
yeah,
when most people would have their attention waning, I sat there thinking, there's no other person who would even try to get away with this. And he was really getting into the weeds of policy on some of these, and people were hanging on it. So it really was a remarkable performance.
It was a virtuoso performance. It's a guy who knows what he's talking about and knows how to do it and enjoys it and lets you know, I'm having a great time.
Yeah, you know, he could mix humor. He was ad-libbing all over the place. It was really a virtuoso performance.
But he's a charmer.
He is.
Was he accurate? Was he telling us the truth?
The fact checkers found some things where he was exaggerating or not. But, you know, in terms of the main themes, the main contrast they were trying to draw, mm-hmm, I think he effectively made his point regardless of whether his numbers were slightly
were
off.
Were there more? Because people talked a lot about how a lot of the things that were said at the Republican convention were just demonstrably untrue, that fact checkers had gone through them and they were demonstrably untrue. And one Republican said, well, we're not going to be held back by the fact checkers. Were the Democrats any more honest, or were there an equal number of mistruths being told?
Yeah, if you look at the list of fact checks, as we have over the last couple of days, most of the fact checks about the Democratic statements are, well, their estimates are off by a little bit, they mischaracterized what somebody said, but they're mischaracterized or they're overplaying kind of the implications of what they said, but the person did actually say something close to that.
And here's the simplification of that explanation, I suppose, from President Obama last night.
Now, our friends down in Tampa at the Republican convention were more than happy to talk about everything they think is wrong with America, but they didn't have much to say about how they'd make it right. They want your vote, but they don't want you to know their plan. And that's because all they have to offer is the same prescriptions they've had for the last 30 years. Have a surplus? Try a tax cut. Deficit too high? Try another. Feel a cold coming on? Take two tax cuts, roll back some regulations, and call us in the morning.
A little humor once again. So what I was trying to get to is the difference in the speakers at the Democratic Convention. And I think one of the more different speakers was the vice president last night. He was very folksy. He got very quiet at times. You were there in the hall. Was there a reason? I know that when speakers want to get your attention, they get very quiet. Were people hanging on his every word?
Yeah. It wasn't a attack dog speech, which is often the role of vice presidents. It was very emotional, particularly when he was talking about the troops and veterans. So, it was a very different kind of speech than I expected.
And he's had as his wife Jill pointed out last night, there was that time in his life when he lost his first wife and a daughter to a car accident and had a tough time coming back from that. And he's been painted as a guy who really understands family. And he came from a background that was not wealth, a working class background, that he really understands scraping to get by. And he talked a little bit about that last night, too.
My dad never failed to remind us that a job is about a lot more than a paycheck. It's about your dignity. It's about respect. It's about your place in the community. It's about being able to look your child in the eye and say, honey, it's going to be okay, and mean it, and know it's true.
Democrats love that kind of sentiment.
They do, and I think Biden followed up with that very effectively. He used it to talk about the auto bailout and the decision to go after Osama bin Laden to make the using Romney quotes, perhaps taken out of context, but to say that these decisions weren't just about saving jobs in the case of the auto bailout, or just about getting that particular guy in the case of Osama bin Laden. It's about America's pride. It's about sending a message to the world. It's about the type of leadership that we have. So I thought he effectively made the case that these decisions are more than just about narrow self-interest.
Mitt Romney evidently did not get a terribly large bump, if at all, from the Republican convention. We don't know yet whether the president got a bump from last night's convention. And, of course, a lot of that, I think, will rest on the jobs numbers that are coming out any moment now, as a matter of fact. If the jobs numbers are up, the stock market was at record highs yesterday, pre-recession highs yesterday, rather. If we have a combination of good jobs numbers and pre-recession highs and good sales numbers, which came out a couple of weeks ago, does that help?
Well, we'll see. I mean, the key factor that we don't know yet is how many people are actually tuning into this. The polls have said that many people are already decided. It's almost record highs.
Bill Clinton got great cable news ratings the night he spoke.
Yeah, and he was competing against a football game, I think. So if people are tuned in and watching, I think they probably would be impressed by the Democratic National Convention. Whether that'll last for the next 2 months is more doubtful.
I'm going to ask you to stick around because maybe there'll be some things you can chime in on politically as we go through the rest of the hour here. But we're going to bring in some of the WFAE news reporters who've been working with us 20 hours a day. I've reduced it from 26 because I want to be truthful about this, to cover the DNC. Julie Rose is here along with Tanner Latham and Michael Tomczyk. We're going to look at many of the events that they witnessed. But we also want to hear from you. We want your reaction to what you experienced as a person living in the city where this event was held. Did you go to any of the events? Did you see a taping of The Daily Show? Were you inconvenienced by all the security? Was this a positive or a negative experience? And what do you think the legacy of this convention will be for Charlotte? Your calls are welcome. 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323. 800-603-WFAE. Of course, online at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. And Julie, let's begin with you. You spent a lot of time covering security precautions and the protesters. First of all, far fewer protesters showed up than we anticipated. Do we know why?
There are a number of different theories. I mean, I think, first of all, the expected numbers were far overblown. I mean, we were never going to see 10,000 protesters. And I don't think even the protesters who worked for 18 months to try and rally folks to come expected to see that. You know, one thing I think that's different about, say, in Chicago, where, you know, the meetings earlier this year had thousands of people protesting. I mean, Charlotte just doesn't have that local base of people to bring out for things. A lot of the people who were protesting, I mean, there was a strong contingent from Occupy Charlotte that would come out. And on Sunday when we had the 800, there were a lot of people from Charlotte. But still, I would say at least half had come from other places. And, you know, so Charlotte is still – and that's one of the things actually that, you know, that last night as I was kind of talking to the protesters, the Occupy Charlotte folks about, you know, what do you think this did – what's this been like for you? You know, I mean, they really feel like they've worked for the last year to get to build a movement of protesting and people who will kind of do something that Charlotte hasn't seen an awful lot of in the last decade mm-hmm. or so. So, you know, there's this bite that we have from this Occupy Charlotte protester named Michael Zhitkoff. And he was telling me, look back at the last year. We had all these first of all, we occupied City Hall the old City Hall lawn for 2.5 months, which, you know, Charlotte hadn't seen. We, you know, there have been people at city council meetings like practically every week, you know, this movement growing and talking, and they've been marching on weekends. And then the Bank of America protests were bigger than we've seen in a long time, if ever, at least certainly in the 5 years I've been here. So DNC for them was just like this culmination.
Go ahead, Michael, play the Michael cut.
Really, what we're seeing here is we're trying to normalize protest culture in Charlotte. If you're concerned with the direction this country is going in under both Republicans and Democrats, it would be great to see you out in the streets, and I think we've helped normalize that.
Trying to normalize the protest culture in the button-down Queen City. Huh? Michael's been a guest on this program,
sure.
And he is an unassuming, intelligent guy that you would not feel threatened by in any way. Many of the protesters, I'm told, said, "We do not want to cause trouble. We're not into property destruction or violence."
Right, right, exactly. And you know, even last night, so after marching every day for the last week, basically, and sometimes twice a day, I was over there at the camp in Marshall Park with these occupiers from Wall Street and from all over the place, and the local Charlotte folks, and they were saying, "Look, we want this to be peaceful. We don't want anyone to get arrested tonight. Don't get arrested if you don't want to be arrested." Like, it was very much like, everybody keep your cool. Let's make this a good, effective march. You know, very different from, I guess, the fears that people had coming into this about anarchists that were going to, you know, break windows and cause troubles of some. We just did not see any of that. I mean, there were 23 arrests this week that I know of. And half of those, let's see, almost half of those were, 16 of those were, I guess that's more than half. My math is a little off this
morning.
Don't worry
about it. We're all tired.
Okay. Anyway, more than half of those were people who wanted to be arrested. They sat down in an intersection to make a statement, yeah. Civil disobedience. So, you know, it was not mass arrests and chaos.
Which leads to the question. $50 million went to Tampa and to Charlotte. There were fewer protesters in Tampa than
yep.
there were in Charlotte. I don't do the math either, but that's $100 million for 1,000 people.
Yeah. Yeah, but all that money wasn't just for the protesters. I mean, a lot of that money, it was for you saw those checkpoints and all the yeah. all the stuff that they brought in, and that's like gone already, you know, and it's not even
you would
noon.
Never know that the city even had anybody here last
I
week.
I mean,
it's all
been
gone.
Swept clean. Now, I will say this too. We don't know exactly how all that money was spent. A lot of that, what we do know that they have released publicly at this point, and I'm expecting we're going to get a lot more detail, because the police here in Charlotte have said, look, once it's all over, we'll be more willing to talk about what we've been doing, but we do know that a lot of that money that we've seen so far released went toward workers' comp and additional insurance and things like that.
But will there be lasting pieces of equipment that will stick around
yes,
long after they go?
Yeah, I mean, we saw a lot of it on display this week.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, there were a lot of officers here from all over the country, and it was actually pleasant. There was at least 3 or 4 police officers on every single street corner. And, of course, the dancing traffic policemen,
yeah.
I think,
right.
from Atlanta
yeah.
or someplace in Georgia, yeah. and the Secret Service and the park police on horses.
Right.
They handled this really, really well.
They did.
They?
They did, and the protesters actually agree with that statement.
Really?
Yeah. And you know what's really interesting? Last night, Chief Monroe was out in front. I mean, every time there was a big march, every time there was some kind of action, he was right there. A lot of times, walking in the front of the group and talking to people and keeping an eye on everything. And there was a lot of communication between the protest groups. We mentioned Michael Zhitkov earlier. I mean, he played a key role with these big actions. Coordinating, communicating, and negotiating in some cases with the police about this is the road we're going to go down. This is what we want to do. We want to feel empowered. Let us do what we want to do. There was some theater back and forth about who's in charge, really. But ultimately, you know, there was everybody had the same goal, which was let's keep this safe and let's let people express themselves.
And occasionally they stopped traffic, not very often. And people thought, I think, that I thought the traffic was going to be horrible, and it really wasn't. And Kevin in Charlotte has a comment about that as well. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Yes, my comment is that I wasn't able to attend the event because of my work schedule, but I was able to tune in to WFA during the whole event, and they did a wonderful job of covering all information. And also the traffic situation was not bad at all. Didn't have any problems at all traveling through on the interstate. And just want to say they did a wonderful job and enjoyed it all.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And these police officers downtown were working very long hours in terrible conditions.
It was really hot.
It was hot.
I was
humid.
Out there all week on my feet. It was hot.
Hot when it wasn't raining.
There were downpours. But they were really even. They kept things at an even keel.
Really did.
Except for you, Michael. I understand. Michael Tomczyk, I understand that you had a little tete-a-tete with the Secret Service yesterday.
it was a small one. I mean, let's not paint the wrong picture. I mean, most of the Secret Service people that I would check with as the night was going on last night were, you know, helpful and friendly. But I was essentially recording sound on a public street, which is what we're told we're allowed to do as journalists, and was just asking a couple questions, and he answered a few of them and didn't realize I was recording. And when he asked, I told him, yes, I am recording this. And he wasn't too happy about that, to say the least. But no, I mean, honestly,
but he didn't express that displeasure until you stopped recording.
He was a clever guy. Yeah, he told me he'd tell me some more information if I'd stopped recording off record. So, oh, okay, yeah. So I stopped recording, and then he just kind of let
you have it. Checkmate.
Yeah, exactly.
Jack and Charlotte, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Good. You guys were talking about the police presence in Charlotte. I wanted to comment on that, because I was one of the police officers that worked in the area with Highway Patrol, and we had, you know, several hundred troopers down here and working in the area and keeping the interstates clear and stuff. The attitude amongst the officers was pretty much, you know, let them do what they want to do and, you know, let them say what they want to say. As long as nobody gets violent, everybody's cool. And, you know, going with that attitude, I think, me personally, I think all the police officers in the area did a pretty good job at that. You know, there were some protesters at certain places. I believe one was Bank of America, where they had some fences up and they did some, you know, hand-holding and trying to block the area. And pretty much the police officers left them alone. And the next thing you know, 30, 45 minutes later, they just get up and leave. So some of the protesting, I believe, was effective when they were, you know, definitely in the streets, but in other areas, the protesters probably weren't so effective because they were actually left alone and ignored at that point.
Did anybody pay any attention to any of the protests?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, last night there were people all over the place videotaping and watching. Now, whether they were, like, connecting with the message, people were listening.
Okay. Jack, thank you for your call. We have to take a break. We'll come back and talk to Tanner Latham and Michael Tomczyk and more with Julie Rose and perhaps even with Eric in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Donald Hack Diamonds, serving Charlotte for more than 30 years. Donald Hack Diamonds buys and sells estate jewelry and offers custom design across from South Park Mall or online at DonaldHack.com. The topic of the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show today is going to be the news roundup, of course, but the big news is the update from the Democratic National Convention, which wrapped up last night in Charlotte with Vice President Joe Biden and President Obama's speech. They'll be talking about that and lots of other things this morning in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. We want to hear from you and your reactions to the DNC and how it affected you, if it did at all, and whether or not you even bothered to come downtown during all of this. 704 800-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or online, wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Julie Hack of Donald Hack Diamonds in Charlotte talks about underwriting on WFAE.
Business owners ask me all the time whether they should partner with WFAE, and I say of course, because of the quality of programming and the consistency of the message. Donald Hack Diamonds has been an underwriter for WFAE for over 17 years. To me, Donald Hack Diamonds and WFAE are a perfect fit.
For more information, email underwriting@wfae.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We'll take more of your calls in a second. We want to hear your personal experiences and your personal impressions, but we're sitting here with WFAE news reporters Michael Tomczyk and Julie Rose and Tanner Latham and, of course, Eric Heberlich from UNC Charlotte. Tanner became our public radio paparazzo, tracking and stalking the various celebrities here, and you did catch up with Perez, is that how you say his name?
It is.
Hilton.
It is Perez Hilton, right.
With Ariana Huffington.
Right. Well, that was actually Michael and Ariana.
And I was not stalking her either. I was at an event that she sponsored, okay. Just to be clear. There was no sneaking around.
You went back.
But Will I Am was there.
That's right.
And
that's
Rosario Dawson. I guess I was kind of, I was there for them too.
Did anybody meet Eva Longoria?
No. I think she was the big get for that. I know, right? And I feel like as the public radio paparazzo, Tomczyk saw more celebrities than I did. But I think what's key in that phrase is that it's public radio paparazzo. So I did it very poorly being a part of the paparazzi. I did everything the wrong way, and I just couldn't figure out the right places to go or the right things to do to track these celebrities. Every time that I'd go somewhere that I thought they would be, I would get something very very lame, or just I'd be standing there by myself, or just be there looking like a total creep, just hanging out outside of these clubs, just like a weirdo with my camera and my, my recorder. It was really pathetic. But I decided right at the very end that our listeners needed to hear from somebody with substance, right? I felt like, Clooney and Longoria, they can find that anywhere, but I felt like for us, for WFAE, we could land somebody like Mo Rocca, who is not a celebrity of any kind of A-list status, but it's somebody who our listeners probably get a kick out of. So he was the big get for me this week as the public radio paparazzi.
And you got his impressions in terms of content on conventions themselves, right?
Absolutely. I talked to him a long time yesterday, and obviously we did the interview on Radio Row right in the middle of Time Warner Cable Arena. And so, one of my first questions was, all right, Mo, you've covered some of these conventions yourself as a in a satirical way. Mm-hmm. What do you think about conventions, and what do you think about the process? And this bite here will tell us pretty clearly what he thinks about it.
For a long time, they've just been a show. That's fine. We accept that. Presentation is part of American politics, image. But I think it's gotten to such a point that the charm is gone. The fixation, the obsession with which speaker dazzled the most, which speaker connected with people at home, which speaker is going to be the star in 2016. It's like, this is choosing a president. It's not American Idol or Star Search.
Wait a minute. He's talking about the first half of this program. So you also, you mentioned that you are the public radio paparazzo, and you felt a little weird doing what you did. But he's a public radio guy, too.
He is.
You must have connected with him somehow.
Oh, absolutely. And, I guess I was as starstruck as you can be as a reporter, just because I have a lot of respect for the work that he does. I think he is extremely funny. I think that a lot of public radio folks are following him in the same way. And so one of my last questions for him was just, if you become a public radio rock star, then that brings with it a certain degree of public radio groupie, mm-hmm. And so I asked him to describe for me what the typical public radio groupie is like. Well,
this is going to hurt.
And a lot of these will probably hit close to home. So let's just hear what he has to say about that.
They're very organic. They buy all their food at co-ops. They have very clear skin. The women, they don't wear makeup. And they come to tape and say, wait, don't tell me. Usually with a tote bag that's, I guess, from their PBS member station, with a rolled-up copy of The Nation at the bottom of it, and maybe there's a plantain there. Not a banana, it's a plantain. And when Carl Castle comes out on stage, they become like Bobby Soxers, you know, seeing Elvis.
That's pretty accurate. He
left out Birkenstocks.
He didn't say Birkenstocks. That's true.
Ew, with Bobby Socks, that's not a good, right? Not a good
one. We all know what that looks like.
Let's take a couple phone calls quickly here from Hillary in Rock Hill. Not the Hillary. Oops. Are you there, Hillary? I got to push the button. Silly me. Hillary, welcome to the program. Hello, Hillary. Hillary once? Hillary
yes,
twice?
Yes,
go ahead. Go ahead.
Hello, are you there?
Yes, we are. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning. My first call was in reaction to your guest who was saying that he was a little surprised at the speech Biden gave. And I said to myself, if you know Joe Biden, you're not surprised at that speech at all. But anyway, I did want to say, then I was listening to his Morocco interview, and I was down there quite a bit. I met Michael in a little class that he spoke to that Winthrop's political science teachers put together for putting on a convention, and my daughter participated in that class. And I take issue with Morocco's comments because as Democrats, we are a very disparate group. We don't get to see each other, different walks of life, different races, different backgrounds. And I feel like the convention served a tremendous purpose to remind us just how many of us are there. We may not always be in communication. We may not be able to, in these days, you sometimes don't even put a bumper sticker on the back of your car. Seeing this convention, I think this was a sea change for politics, for the face of politics. And so Morocco doesn't realize, I think, that the people need it. He may not feel it has a lot of value entertainment-wise or what have you, but the people need it.
You know, there has been some discussion that the Charlotte Democratic National Convention may be the last big convention ever because we don't need them anymore because of the Twitterverse and just because these are big commercial parties. And
a lot of taxpayer dollars go into things, too.
Well, $100 million went into it because most of the money for the conventions themselves are raised by the political parties.
Well, each of the parties gets $18 million of federal tax dollars to put on the convention.
So that's $136 million.
Right. They get the $50 million for security.
But she brings up a good point that it is a chance for people to get together and mobilize, and it does become – it's more than a commercial. It's people who are completely disconnected from politics get to look into the sausage being made and maybe might become more civic-minded as a result, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or an Independent or a Green Party member. Mike in Charlotte, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mike. How you doing?
Good.
Good. You know, this is one of these sort of weeks where I think all of us are going to be able to look back and wonderfully reminisce over certain highlights that we had. I guess for me, it was being at the Daily Show yesterday.
Lucky dog.
And what was that?
Lucky dog.
I had VIP tickets, too.
Oh, hey.
Not even our paparazzi.
I was about to say, that's better than what Tanner got.
I was up in the balcony. Jeez, nice.
Well, it was a family connection, but anyway, poor Ruth.
Okay.
And to hear him talk about the Big Daddies, he said, he was referring, of course, to Bill Clinton's speech. And again, lucky dog, I was not on the fourth row for Clinton's speech, but I was in the room, and he clearly owned the room from the time he walked into the arena. And I just loved Stewart's take on it, where he just, puts his fingers to his lips and oh, math. Because it was one of the most instructive and cogent political speeches, and Michael was talking about this earlier in the hour, that I think I've ever heard. And it was mainly because, and this is what Stewart was highlighting, math, arithmetic. And Stewart was talking about how little we hear of that in political discourse these days. Actual numbers, actual facts. And so he pontificated about that. And what's great about Stewart is, while the show, almost all of us love it, what you see on the show is funny. the whole, it's a two-hour experience to go, and they do some warm-ups. The correspondents happened to come out yesterday, and then afterwards, of course, they do the extra interview yesterday was with Austin Goolsbee.
You're killing me, Mike. You're killing me. This two-hour experience.
I'll do one more because the Q&A with Stewart goes for about 15 minutes or so before the show, and that was the quickest back and forth. It was superb.
Well, I salute you, sir. Congratulations to you. You are obviously something special in the universe to have gotten in with a VIP, or just to get in. You're special in the universe. Thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Lynn in Charlotte, welcome to the program. Lynn, welcome to the program. My button's not working today.
Hi, right button. Hi, we were community credential holders. We got over our disappointment. We went to Uptown anyway. We got on the drove down to Tubbell Road, got on the Lynx train to come up, and so we were talking with some delegates from Washington State, and they were just telling us how nice people in Charlotte are. Oh, people in Charlotte are just so nice. And, of course, that was wonderful to hear, you know, talk with this group from across the country. And then we even experienced that ourselves. I mean, we went to the American Presidential Experience with my two sons. And as we're trying to find our way, where's Third Street? You know, this happens, I'd say, three, four times. People would say, oh, you turn up this way. You just go this way. And people were so incredibly helpful. And so, you know, and we could say, we live here. Thank you so much. And that was wonderful. And then another thing that was funny, I mean, I'd say three different people said, you know, just in passing, some guy asked us to buy buttons. We said, no, we're fine. We're good. And he said, how about that Clinton speech? Someone else did that just randomly. Said, what'd you think of that Clinton speech? And so there was just such a sense of, just kind of camaraderie and community downtown yesterday. I thought it was just fabulous.
Lynn, thank you for your call. And Michael Tomsic is here. And you run into several people, who have more than several, actually. Who
seemed like everybody I talked to.
Yeah, I think the people who didn't come down, charlatans who live here who didn't come down, whether they're Republicans or Democrats or don't care about politics at all, missed something by not coming here. At least for a few minutes.
I could see that. And really, it's funny, as Lynn was talking, I mean, I was thinking that's exactly what I heard from so many different people last night. I was kind of bouncing around the Epicenter and some of the different theaters, like the Belk Theater, for example, where they were showing the speeches last night. And a lot of these places were packed in Uptown, and it seemed like almost every single one of the people I talked to had tickets to see the president of Bank of America Stadium. Of course, that didn't work out, but kind of like Lynn, you know, it seemed like most of the people I talked to got over their disappointment and decided, you know, this is something that we're just going to take advantage of. I mean, how often do you have, you know, this city that you have access to and that you know, had a ticket to see, but still this chance to kind of be in the thick of, you know, a political universe, so to speak, for a couple days, for a week, maybe it's just a night. I mean, I talked to this one person, Amy Adams, who drove here from Furman University in Greenville, South Carolina, with 18 of her friends, and they were just coming for last night. They drove up yesterday afternoon, and when the speeches ended, they were going to drive back last night. And they all had tickets to the stadium. They got them through the chapter of their college Democrats. But anyway, you would think that, you know, 19-person road trip, basically, like, you know, that there would be this big kind of level of disappointment about, oh, we're not actually going to get into the stadium. But that really wasn't there. Here's what Adams had to say.
It was honestly just great to walk around Charlotte. It's just been great to be surrounded by a bunch of other people who are, you know, cheering and excited about everything that's going on.
You know, there were a lot of people downtown last night because they wanted to get into the speech at the stadium. And you mentioned the Belk Theater was open, and they opened the McGlowan here in Spirit Square for people to get into. And last night they took a crane shot of the MSNBC experience at Epicenter, and it looked like the place was going to collapse under the weight of the people gathered there, not for MSNBC, but to watch the president on the big screen that MSNBC put up. What kind of exposure is that going to give the city of Charlotte? I mean, we looked from what little I saw of the television coverage when we saw Charlotte we looked really good.
Right. Well, one of the funny things, too, I'm sure Tanner and Julie could relate to this as well. A lot of the media folks that I talked to, I think it was kind of a blessing for Charlotte that it came right after, you know, the situation in Tampa where there was this tropical storm and that kind of put a damper on everything.
And yet we got the storm. We got the rain.
True,
they didn't get it.
True, yeah. Although last night, of course, it was, you know, a perfectly clear but kind of hot night. Mike, what you're getting to is that most of the people I talked to this week, I would say, came away with good things to say about Charlotte. I mean, I talked to a lot of people who were impressed with the city and who enjoyed the city. And more than anything else, to get again, to go back to Lynn's point on the call, just really enjoyed kind of the sense of being with this group of people who are as excited about something as they are and just feeling like they're in this kind of vibrant atmosphere where people are enjoying themselves.
What about business? A lot of businesses chose not to stay open. Many did. Those that did they do well? Do we know?
It's hit or miss. You know, I mean, it's tough to say. There are some businesses, catering businesses, for example, some restaurants in prime locations that made a killing this week. I mean, made tons and tons of money. But then there are others where, you know, whether it's just the location isn't exactly right, the hours aren't exactly right. I mean, it's really tough to say, I guess, as of now. Lisa Miller, one of our colleagues, did a nice story on that yesterday afternoon. But it's tough to say for sure, really.
What, if any, lasting legacy will this convention leave for Charlotte? Take the politics out of it. Just the fact that we had all these people here, that we were in angst for months about whether we could really pull this off, and by gosh, we did.
Well, I can speak just from the in terms of the stuff I was focused on, which is the security, the police, the protesters. We're going to see a lot more protesting in Charlotte. The protesters here in this area feel empowered. And also, the police have a lot of new equipment that we're going to start seeing around town. They've got all kinds of new stuff that that we get to keep. It's, you know, it's kind of the perk of being hosting the convention and getting all that federal money.
So how do we top it? What's next?
The Winter Olympics.
The Winter Olympics. Why not? Climate change. That's Dr. Eric Heberle. He's been with us all week from UNC Charlotte. Julie Rose, Tanner Latham, Michael Tomczyk from WFAE News. And I hope, Tanner, you can continue to be the public radio paparazzi.
That's right.
Congratulations on your title. Thanks for your calls. I'm Mike Collins at Charlotte Talks on WFAE.